A US Air Force Lockheed Starfighter, a slim, stub-winged, single-seat supersonic interceptor, taxis to a halt on an airbase. A radar technician sits at a screen in a dimly lit room.
Captain?
What is it, Webb?
A blip, sir. Just came on the screen.
How do you read it?
Aircraft of some sort. By the size of it and the speed. It's not one of ours, sir. It doesn't even read like anything I've ever seen.
What was the approach?
None, sir. It was just there, like it fell out of the sky or something.
Current position?
Directly over the Omaha installation, sir. Holding there.
Watch the scope, Webb. Air Defense will want to send somebody up to get a closer look. I think we have a real UFO on our hands.
A starfighter scrambles from a hangar, takes off, and climbs at a steep angle into the sky. The unmistakable outline of the United Starship Enterprise comes into view, flying in a clear blue sky.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. Tomorrow is yesterday.
Captain's log, stardate 3113.2. We were en route to Starbase 9 for resupply when a black star of high gravitational attraction began to drag us toward it. It required all warp power in reverse to pull us away from the star. But like snapping a rubber band, the breakaway sent us plunging through space, out of control, to stop here, wherever we are. Mr. Spock.
Except for secondary systems, everything is out, sir. We are on impulse power only.
Auxiliaries.
If Mr. Scott is still with us, auxiliaries should be on momentarily. Are you all right, Lieutenant?
As Spock helps Uhura back to her seat, the lights in various systems start to come back online.
Mr. Scott is still with us.
Kirk helps the duty engineering officer to his feet.
This is the captain. Damage control parties on all decks. Check in. All departments, tie in with the record computer. Report casualties and operational readiness to the first officer. Kirk out.
General Uhura.
Contact, Starfleet Control. I want them alerted to the position of that black star in the area of Starbase 9.
Yes, sir.
Captain, casualty reports indicate only minor injuries. Engineering reports warp engines non-operational. Mr. Scott overrode the automatic helm setting and is holding us in orbit on impulse power.
Orbit where, Mr. Scott?
Earth, Captain. We were on a general course in this direction when we were pulled in by the star. Apparently, the breakaway threw us on in the same direction.
Kirk steps down into the well.
Screen on.
And sits in the captain's chair.
We are too low in the atmosphere to retain this orbit, Captain. Engineering reports we have sufficient impulse power to achieve escape velocity.
Give us some altitude, Mr. Sulu.
Yes, sir. Helm answering. She's sluggish, sir.
Captain, normal Starfleet channel has nothing on it but static. I'm getting something on another frequency, but it's not Starfleet.
Put it on audio.
This is the 5:30 news summary, Cape Kennedy. The first manned moonshot is scheduled for Wednesday, 6 a.m., Eastern Standard Time. All three astronauts who are to make this historic...
Kirk goes over to Spock.
Man, moonshot. That was in the late 1960s.
Apparently, Captain. So are we.
Kirk's eyes narrow, and he turns to look at the view screen.
What?
Whiplash propelled us into a time warp, Captain. Backward. Exact chronometer readings in a few moments.
Captain. I'm getting ground-to-air transmission.
Verified. Scanners report some type of craft approaching from below us, under cloud cover and closing.
The starfighter pilot searches the sky above his head.
J4, this is Blackjack. We're tracking both you and the UFO.
I have him on my screen. Following.
Mr. Sulu, can you gain altitude faster? I want to walk distance.
Picking up, sir.
But she's still slow in responding.
The Enterprise starts to climb.
Blackjack, this is Blue J4. UFO is picking up speed and climbing. I'm going in closer.
The starfighter climbs rapidly.
Blue J4, you should be close enough for visual contact.
The Enterprise appears ahead and above.
I can see it now. Whatever this thing is, it's big. Two cylindrical projections on top, one below. Purpose undetermined.
We have two flights scrambled and on the way. They should rendezvous in your sector in 2 minutes.
Won't be here. The UFO is climbing away fast.
On the Enterprise.
Blue J4, you are ordered to close on the UFO and attempt to force him to land. We want it brought down, or at least disabled until the other planes arrive.
Acknowledged. Closing on target.
Positive identification, Captain. Aircraft is an interceptor, equipped with missiles, possibly armed with nuclear warheads. If he hits us with one, he might damage us severely. Perhaps beyond our capacity to repair under current circumstances.
Scotty, activate tractor beam. Lock onto that aircraft and hold it out there.
Captain, this type of aircraft might be too fragile to take our tractor beam.
Tractor beam on, sir. We have the target.
A blinding light hits the fighter. The pilot lowers his visor.
Aircraft is breaking up, Captain.
Transporter room. Can you lock onto the cockpit of that aircraft?
Scanning area, sir.
Try and beam that pilot aboard. Take over, Mr. Spock.
The pilot, in his bright orange flight suit and white helmet, materializes in the transportation chamber just as Captain Kirk enters the transporter room. The pilot has his back to Kirk as he takes off his helmet.
Welcome aboard the Enterprise.
The pilot, in his early 30s, with short brown hair and startled blue eyes, turns and looks at Kirk, and then at the transporter room.
You speak English?
That's right. You can step off the transporter.
Captain John Christopher, United States Air Force. Serial number 4857932.
Relax, Captain. You're among friends.
Kirk beckons him off the platform.
I'm Captain James T. Kirk.
What's going on here? Where am I? What happened? You people, who are you?
All in good time, Captain. Meanwhile, let me apologize for bringing you aboard the ship so abruptly, but it couldn't be helped. I didn't know that your craft couldn't stand up to our tractor beam.
Don't give me any double talk. Just tell me who you are.
We'll tell you what we decide to tell you in a few moments. In the meantime, relax. You're our guest. I have a feeling you'll find it interesting.
Bridge to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here. What is it, Mr. Spock?
The aircraft has completely broken up, Captain. Shall we turn off the tractor beam?
Affirmative. We have the pilot aboard. I'll be right up. Kirk out. Follow me.
Christopher looks around, mystified and suspicious, and follows Kirk out into the corridor. As they walk towards the turbolift, a young female yeoman in a short gold Starfleet uniform tunic passes them. Christopher stares after her.
Good morning, Captain.
Good morning, Captain.
A woman?
Crew.
They step into the lift.
Bridge.
Kirk considers Christopher.
Must have taken quite a lot to build a ship like this.
There are only 12 like it in the fleet.
I see. Did the Navy...
We're a combined service, Captain. Our authority is the United Earth Space Probe Agency.
United Earth?
This is very difficult to explain. We're from your future. A time warp placed us here. It was an accident.
You seem to have a lot of them. However, I can't deny the fact that you are here, with this ship.
I never have believed in little green men.
Neither have I.
Captain Christopher, this is my first officer, Lieutenant Commander Spock.
Captain?
Feel free to look around, Captain. Don't touch anything, but I think you'll find it interesting.
Interesting is a word and a half for it, Captain.
Tearing his eyes from Spock's slanting eyebrows and pointed ears, he walks along the upper gallery, looking at the instrumentation. Spock and Kirk step down into the well.
We've achieved a stable orbit out of Earth's atmosphere. Our deflectors are operative, enough to prevent our being picked up again as a UFO. And Mr. Scott wishes to speak to you about the engines.
Very well, Mr. Spock.
Lieutenant Uhura comes up to Christopher.
Anything else on your mind?
Captain Christopher.
Uhura points out the bridge's various features to the visitor. Kirk ushers Spock out of earshot.
What about him?
We cannot return him to Earth, Captain. He already knows too much about us and is learning more. I do not specifically refer to Captain Christopher, but suppose an unscrupulous man were to gain certain knowledge of man's future. Such a man could manipulate key industries, stocks, and even nations. And in so doing, change what must be. And if it is changed, Captain, you and I, and all that we know, might not even exist.
Your logic can be most annoying.
Kirk moves closer to Christopher.
That flight suit must be uncomfortable. Why don't you have the quartermaster issue him something more suitable? And then I want to meet you and him in my quarters.
Yes, sir.
Kirk leaves the bridge. Awed by what he's seen, Captain Christopher scratches his earlobe, but finds himself looking straight at the elfin-eared science officer and becomes self-conscious. Spock raises an eyebrow.
Computer on. Record.
Recording.
Come. Captain's log supplemental. Engineering Officer Scott informs warp engines damaged, but can be made operational and re-energized.
Computed and recorded, dear.
Computer, you will not address me in that manner. Compute.
Computed, dear.
Kirk casts a jaundiced eye at Spock.
Mr. Spock, I ordered this computer and its interlinking systems repaired.
I have investigated it, Captain. To correct the fault will require an overhaul of the entire computer system. A minimum of 3 weeks at a star base.
I wouldn't mind so much if only it didn't get so affectionate.
It also has an unfortunate tendency to giggle.
I take it that a lady computer is not routine.
We put in a Signet 14 for general repair and maintenance. Signet 14 is a planet dominated by women. They seem to feel the ship's computer system lacked a personality. They gave it one. Female, of course.
Well, you people certainly have interesting problems. I'd love to stay around to see how your girlfriend works out, but...
I'm afraid you'll have to. We can't send you back.
Can't? Well, Spock here told me that your transporter can beam down an object even from an orbit this high.
It's not the transporter, it's you. You know what the future looks like. If anybody else finds out, they could change the course of it, destroy it.
Well, then my disappearance would change something, too.
Spock shakes his head.
I have run a computer check on all historical tapes. They show no record of any relevant contribution by John Christopher.
Look, Captain, I don't buy all of your time accident story. Now, the experts can figure out who you are, what you are. It's my duty to report what I've seen. Well, what would you do?
I'd report. If I could. We can't take the risk.
I don't want to know about risks. I have a wife, two children. What about them?
I'm sorry.
Engine room to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here. What is it, Scotty?
Progress report, sir. Everything's jury-rigged, but we're coming along with the repairs. We should be able to re-energize in about 4 hours, but...
But what, Scotty?
Well, sir, as I say, the engines are being repaired, but we've no place to go in this time.
If you
see what I mean.
Kirk chews his lip.
Sir?
Yes, Scotty, carry on.
Too bad, Captain. Maybe I can't go home, but neither can you. You're as much a prisoner in time as I am.
The two men look at each other shrewdly.
Captain's log, stardate 3113.7. Our engines are being repaired, but we are still locked in time. And we have aboard a passenger whom we do not want, and we cannot return.
Recommendation for his disposition, dear.
Maintenance note. My recording computer has a serious malfunction. Recommended either be corrected or scrapped. Compute.
Computed.
Bridge to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here.
Have some new information regarding Captain Christopher. Important, I see you both immediately.
Yes, Mr. Spock, report to my quarters. I'll contact Captain Christopher.
Yes, sir. Bridge out.
Captain Christopher. Captain Christopher. Security, this is the captain.
Security chief here, sir.
All decks alert. Captain Christopher is not in his assigned quarters. He may be trying to escape the ship. I want a man outside the transporter room immediately. I'm heading there myself.
On a lower deck, Christopher, in a gold Starfleet uniform, heads for the transporter room. He hides around a corner as a security guard comes by, knocks him out, and takes his phaser. In the transporter room, he finds the duty chief, Kyle.
All right, nice and easy. Now, I'm gonna step into that thing and you're gonna transport me back to Earth.
Kirk comes in behind Christopher and knocks him out.
Well, Jim, with the exception of a slight bruise or two, our captain is as healthy as a proverbial horse. He'll be coming out of it in a minute or two.
He tried to escape. And how he feels. But I can't send him back with what he knows.
Jim, what if we can't go back? Well, what do we do? Sit up here and wait for our supplies to run out, our power to die? It has to eventually, you know. And we certainly can't go back to Earth. That would be worse than the captain being returned. There are 430 of us. Now, that means 430 chances of altering the future.
Yes. We're not in that position yet.
I'm glad to hear it.
And if we do get back to where we belong, then he won't belong. We're roughly about the same age, but in our society, he'd be useless. Archaic.
But maybe he could be retrained, re-educated.
Now you're sounding like Spock.
If you're gonna get nasty, I'm gonna leave.
Could he be retrained to forget his family? His children?
The answer to that is no.
Oh.
Kirk goes over to the bio bed.
You all right?
Yeah. I see physical training is required in your service, too.
Hmm. Crude methods, but effective.
What does he mean by that?
It's just a joke, Captain.
You said you had some additional information, Mr. Spock?
I made an error in my computations.
Oh?
This could be an historic occasion. I find that we must return Captain Christopher to Earth, after all.
Why? You said I made no relative contribution.
Poor choice of words on my part. I neglected, in my initial run-through, to correlate the possible contributions by offspring. I find, after running a cross-check on that factor, that your son, Colonel Sean Jeffrey Christopher, headed, or will head, the first successful Earth-Saturn probe, which is a rather significant...
Wait a minute, I don't have a son.
You mean yet? The doctor is correct. Unless we return Captain Christopher to Earth, there will be no Colonel Sean Jeffrey Christopher to go to Saturn.
Well, that's it, isn't it? We'll have to find some way of...
Christopher is grinning.
A boy. I'm going to have a son.
McCoy smiles. Spock looks mystified. Later, Spock, Kirk, and Christopher meet in a briefing room.
Acknowledging that we must return Captain Christopher, there are several problems. Prime of which is the explanation of his return. We tracked his plane wreckage down after our tractor beam crushed it. It crashed in an open section of southern Nebraska.
That means those search parties will be crawling all over that wreckage.
And Captain Christopher himself complicated the matter.
When I made visual contact, I turned on my wing cameras.
and I got close enough to take some pretty clear pictures of you. Air Defense Command will be processing that film fast. And ADC Control was probably recording my radio transmissions.
If I remember my history, these things were being dismissed as weather balloons, sun dogs, explainable things, at least publicly.
Captain, our tractor beam caught and crushed an Air Force plane. It'll be impossible to explain us as anything other than a genuine UFO. Possibly alien, definitely destructive.
What about our problem, Mr. Spock? Any ideas on how to get us back to our own time?
A theory. A reverse application of what happened to us. Logically, it could work. Also, logically, there are 100 variables, any one of which could put us in a worse position than we're in now.
Kirk looks at Christopher.
We're going to have to go back and get those reports and photos. Captain feels duty bound to report what he saw. There won't be any evidence to back him up.
That makes me out to be either a liar or a fool.
Perhaps.
Not at all. He'll simply be one of the thousands who thought he saw a UFO.
Captain, I know that base. I was stationed there a year ago. I'd like to...
No, Captain. Thank you. But if anything should go wrong, you might get hurt. We couldn't risk that. Neither could you or your son.
Well, I'd like to help. I could sketch a layout of the place for you. Show you where the record section and the photo lab are.
Kirk hands Christopher a report pad. The Air Force captain sits down quite happily to write. Spock and Kirk exchange a glance. It's night on Earth. On an Air Force base in Nebraska, a sergeant in a blue Air Force uniform and a forage cap patrols the corridors of the 498th Air Base Group, Air Defense Command. As he disappears around a corner, Kirk and Sulu materialize by the water cooler. They look around. They're wearing the standard Starfleet Command uniform of gold top, black trousers, and boots. Sulu carries a bag on a strap over his shoulder. Kirk points down the gray-painted corridor and taps at a notice board with an amused smile. They stop briefly at a cabinet of sports trophies. Kirk finds a door with Statistical Services Division, 498th Air Base Group, painted on the glass. He glances in and tries the handle. It's locked. Sulu reaches into the bag slung at his side and produces an electronic picklock device. Kirk points it at the lock. The door opens. Kirk takes a torch from Sulu and leads the way inside. Sulu closes the door behind them. Kirk goes to a desk and looks through some papers. Along one wall are a row of filing cabinets, along another wall a row of tall computers loaded with large reel-to-reel spools. Kirk and Sulu examine them.
Primitive computer. I've seen them demonstrated in museums.
Me too. And if this one's like those, it'll make the devil's own noise if you start it.
I don't intend to start it.
On board the Enterprise, McCoy paces the transporter room.
How long have they been down there now?
15 minutes, 28 seconds.
Well, shouldn't they be coming up?
It is a fact, Doctor, that prowling by stealth is more time-consuming than a direct approach. In our case, a...
Shouldn't you be working on your time warp calculations, Mr. Spock?
I am.
Spock looks at McCoy coolly and raises his eyebrows. In the airbase office, Spock and Kirk are removing tapes from the computers. The lights suddenly come on.
Hold it. Get your hands up.
The sergeant comes into the room, his revolver raised.
Now, one at a time, hand me those belts.
Kirk and Sulu exchange a glance and hand over the belts that had their communicators on.
And the bag.
Sulu takes off the bag he has slung around his shoulder. The sergeant takes it and takes two hasty steps backwards.
It's been too long. Jim should have at least signaled by now.
You may be correct, Doctor. Open communicator channel.
What was that?
What was what?
That noise.
I didn't hear anything.
That noise. It's coming from one of these things.
Keeping Kirk and Sulu covered, he lowers the belts to the floor and opens the communicator.
The emergency signal. Stay right where you are.
One emergency signal, sir.
Beam up immediately.
Only one signal. What happened?
We'll know in a moment, Doctor.
In the airbase office, the sergeant dematerializes. Kirk throws an exasperated look at Sulu, who stands with a vexed frown, hands on hips. McCoy is equally startled when a gun-toting Air Force sergeant starts to materialize in the transport chamber. He turns to look at Spock, who raises a quizzical eyebrow. Eyes fearful, the sergeant slowly turns and looks at the tall, dark-haired figure with deeply slanting black eyebrows and pointed ears, who's walking forward to examine him. The two men gaze at each other. Spock raises an eyebrow. Spock returns to the console.
Spock here. Are you all right, Captain?
Yes, I'm all right, but as you can see, we have another problem.
The sergeant gulps as Spock turns an acerbic eye on him.
Captain's log, stardate 3113.9. First Officer Spock recording. Due to an unfortunate accident, we have taken aboard another unwanted passenger.
In the airbase office, Kirk closes the door and turns off the lights.
Your surprise package is an air police sergeant from the base.
I want you to keep him in the transporter room. No sense letting him see any more of the ship than is necessary.
I don't believe there'll be any trouble in that respect, Captain.
McCoy gently removes the gun and communicator from the sergeant's unresisting hands.
Our guest seems quite satisfied to remain where he is.
Kirk out.
Kirk goes back to the computer.
What was the chronometer reading when we first sighted Christopher's jet? 5:30 in that time zone, maybe a little after. That would put it at the end of these tapes. We've got them all.
Sulu puts the last computer spool in his bag and follows Kirk out of the statistical services offices. Kirk checks the corridor. They start to creep away, but duck quickly out of sight round a corner as a door opens ahead of them and two technicians in overalls and aprons appear. The men pass by without spotting the two Starfleet officers. Kirk lets out a silent sigh of relief, and he and Sulu make their way to the room the technicians have just left. Kirk pushes the door open. It's the photographic laboratory. There are viewscopes and shelves full of reels of film.
You'll try the dark room.
They go to a room opening off the one they're in. Kirk pulls a switch and a red light comes on. Both men disappear inside. In the guard room, a warning light flashes. Three men hurry to respond.
Hello, lad.
That's it. That's all of them. Signal Mr. Spock that we're almost ready to beam up. I'll make a check of the files just in case.
Yes, sir.
As Kirk steps out, the three guards appear. He quickly shuts the door behind him. And he leaps on the nearest guard. Inside the dark room, Sulu looks up at the noise as Kirk takes on all three men. Kirk resorts to his fists, then trips his attackers to the floor, then swings from a doorframe, leaping over them as they blunder and fall around him. Finally, they manage to wrestle Kirk to the floor. As the two airmen drag him to his feet, the officer draws his revolver. The officer opens the door to the dark room and looks inside. Sulu has taken the hint and the room is empty. The officer looks behind the blackout drapes at the door, mystified, then comes back out to Kirk.
All right, where's the other one?
One other one?
Your partner. I saw you looking that way and I saw somebody move in there.
No. Just me. Besides, could anyone get out of here without you seeing them?
The lieutenant colonel looks puzzled.
No, nobody should have been able to.
Kirk shrugs and smiles charmingly.
Your decision to beam up was quite correct, Mr. Sulu.
Engine room to Mr. Spock.
Spock here.
We've completed re-energizing the warp engine, sir. We can refire them any time.
Do so now, engineer. We'll need all power to test our theory.
Aye, sir. Engine room out.
Spock is in the briefing room with McCoy and Sulu. He examines the wing camera film from Captain Christopher's starfighter.
Poor photography.
Blast your theories and observations, Mr. Spock. What about Jim? He's down there alone, probably under arrest. He doesn't have a communicator and we can't locate him or beam him back aboard without one.
I am aware of that, Doctor.
He opens a channel.
This is the first officer, Captain Christopher, to the briefing room.
Now look, mister, you and I had better start communicating. I want to know how you got in here. Now that's a simple question. Give me a simple answer. Nobody saw you. You got all the way inside here without tripping any alarm. How did you do it?
Believe me, Colonel, you wouldn't believe me.
Now don't try to be funny. How did you get in?
I popped in out of thin air.
You seem to think this is some kind of a game.
No, Colonel, I know it's no game.
All right, what did you say your name was?
For the fourth time, my name is James T. Kirk.
And how did you get inside a top security installation, James T. Kirk?
I told you you wouldn't believe me.
Lieutenant Colonel Fellini is perching on the corner of his desk. Kirk is sitting on a chair in front of him, and a guard stands behind them. Fellini picks up Kirk's communicator.
Colonel, would you mind being careful with that?
Oh, that worries you a little bit, huh? What is that, a radio? Transmitter of some kind?
Of some kind.
You can be more specific than that, Kirk. I don't like mysteries.
You don't stop being careless with that, and you'll have one. A big one.
I'll have it disassembled and examined. We are not dummies, mister. We know how to find out things we want to know.
He tosses the communicator to the guard. Kirk winces. Fellini looks at Kirk's uniform.
What is that? Is that a uniform of some kind?
This little thing? Something I slipped on.
But Kirk, maybe you don't realize how serious this is. Sabotage of a government installation.
Did I sabotage something?
No, we stopped you in time. But what would you have done if we hadn't found you?
Believe me, Colonel, nothing at all.
Is that what you're here for? Nothing at all?
That's what would have happened if you hadn't interfered.
All right, Kirk, maybe this will make you laugh. Sabotage, espionage, unauthorized entry, burglary. How are those for starters? And I can think up lots more if you don't start talking.
All right, Colonel, the truth is I'm a little green man from Alpha Centauri, a beautiful place. You ought to see it.
I am going to lock you up for 200 years.
Kirk turns haplessly away.
That ought to be just about right.
On board the Enterprise, Christopher has joined Spock, McCoy, and Sulu in the briefing room.
He's probably being held in security section. Even if they'd notified the authorities, it'll take a little time for someone to get there.
Quite logical, Captain. Can you give us the coordinates to beam down a landing party near those interrogation rooms?
Yes. But you're not going to get them unless you take me with you.
I can't do that, Captain.
If something went wrong...
Something's already gone wrong. Of course, you could beam down anywhere inside that base, but it would take time to find him.
The two men lock eyes. Spock's eyebrow twitches, and he turns to Sulu.
Mr. Sulu, you and Captain Christopher will beam down with me. The captain will provide the coordinates for the transporter chief.
Shall I issue phasers?
One for you, one for me. Set them on heavy stun force.
Yes, sir.
With a victorious smile, Christopher comes over to Spock.
You don't trust me, Spock.
Spock turns to him.
In fact, I do. But only to a certain point.
The Vulcan studies Christopher like a specimen. Later, Spock, Sulu, and Christopher step onto the transporter chamber. Spock shows the Air Force captain where to stand.
Energize.
Transporter Chief Kyle beams them down. The Air Force sergeant, standing next to him, gawps as the three men disappear in front of his eyes.
Do they do that all the time?
Kyle nods.
Are you hungry?
Uh-huh.
What would you like?
Maybe some chicken soup.
Kyle pops a data file into the replicator beside the console. A bowl of soup appears. The sergeant, who's been staring at the transporter platform, sniffs the air and turns to look at the small, microwave-sized cabinet set into the wall. He dips a finger into the bowl and tastes it. Kyle nods. On the airbase, a guard stands outside the Lieutenant Colonel's door. Spock, Christopher, and Sulu peep around the corner. Christopher, in a Starfleet uniform, steps out and saunters past the guard, who automatically comes to attention.
Just a minute, sir. Hold it!
Sulu delivers a rabbit chop from behind. In Fellini's office.
See what that is, Airman.
It's Spock, who immobilizes the airman with a Vulcan nerve pinch. Kirk knocks Fellini to the floor. As Spock examines Kirk's hand, Kirk notices Captain Christopher.
Don't you find that painful, Captain?
Yes, I do. What's he doing here?
He knew the exact beam-down coordinates for this section of the base. It was necessary to bring him along.
I see. Well, no harm done.
Mr. Sulu, did you have a chance to check out those tapes?
Mr. Spock ran them through our computers. They were the right ones. We got them all.
They know you've been here.
All they have is a mystery and no answers. Mr. Sulu, signal the transporter chief for to beam up.
Yes, sir. Not me.
Christopher aims the guard's revolver at them. Christopher points a revolver at Kirk and Sulu, and beyond them at Spock, who's disappeared into Fellini's inner office.
Don't be a fool. You know what's at stake.
You bet I do. My family. A son that isn't born yet. You don't have to return me now, Captain. Spock, come out of there.
You can't explain your presence on the base.
I told you it's my duty to report everything I've seen. That's explanation enough. Spock!
You'll go home, Christopher. But you'll do it our way.
Over my dead body.
Spock steps through from the corridor behind Christopher and delivers a nerve pinch.
I suspect that he might not wish to return with us.
Kirk smiles.
Four to beam up, Mr. Sulu.
Yes, sir.
Captain's log, stardate 3114.1. We must make an attempt to break free of this time, or we and our reluctant passengers will remain its prisoners. All we have is a theory and a few facts.
Mr. Scott and I both agree that the only possible solution is a slingshot effect, like the one that put us here. My computations indicate that if we fly toward the sun, seek out its magnetic attraction, then pull away at full power, the whiplash will propel us into another time warp.
Slingshot effects are fine for you people. How do you propose to return the sergeant and me?
Logically, as we move faster and faster toward the sun, we'll begin to move backward in time. We'll actually go back beyond yesterday, beyond the point when we first appeared in the sky. Then, breaking free will shoot us forward in time, and we'll transport you back at a point before any of this happened.
You won't have anything to remember, because it never will have happened.
What if you can't pull free of the sun?
Oh, we'll do that, all right, Captain. We'll not be getting so close that my engines couldn't pull us out. What I am worried about, sir, that we may not have much control when we're thrown forward again.
Helm control?
Braking control, sir. If I can't stop us soon enough, we may overshoot our time. And if I stop the engine suddenly, the strain may tear us apart. Any way we do it, it means a mighty rough ride.
Kirk looks at Spock and Christopher.
Well, gentlemen, we all have to take a chance. Especially if one is all you have. Assume your stations.
They leave the briefing room. As the Enterprise moves out of Earth orbit, Christopher stands beside Kirk in the captain's chair, watching the large view screen.
After laser confirmed. Engineering direction. Control green. Environmental control. Negative.
Christopher looks around the bridge in wonder.
Negative. Ahead, warp factor 3, Mr. Sulu.
Environmental control.
Warp factor 3, sir.
The Earth dwindles.
Never thought I'd make it into space. I was in line to be chosen for the space program. I didn't qualify.
Take a good look around, Captain. You made it here ahead of all of them.
Captain Christopher glances over at Kirk, smiles and nods. The Enterprise powers forward on its slingshot trajectory. Sulu, at the helm, monitors the controls carefully.
Sir, our speed is increasing. We're traveling at more than warp 8, Mr. Spock.
Since we've passed Mercury, the sun's pull on us has increased greatly. From here, we'll move even faster. And, Captain, notice the chronometers. They've started backward. Minute by minute, the speed of time passage will now increase.
Kirk turns to Captain Christopher.
Get your gear and report to the transporter. I'm Captain Christopher. You only have about 15 years, so you better hurry.
Christopher smiles and hurries off to the lift.
Approaching breakaway point, on the countdown. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, Mr. Sulu.
The lights dim to almost nothing as the slingshot effect takes hold. The Enterprise slews into a steep banked curve, and the bridge crew all hang on to their seats.
More power, Mr. Sulu.
The huge vessel jolts and shudders. Suddenly, the bridge lights come back on and Sulu is thrown forward over his console as the slingshot effect vanishes and the Enterprise returns to its normal attitude. Kirk, Spock, Uhura, and the rest of the bridge crew ease themselves back into their seats. Spock comes over to Kirk.
We've broken free and heading back.
Gaining speed now, Captain. We're now at warp 4. Warp 7. 8. Off the dial, sir.
Chronometer's moving forward again, Captain.
You have the chronometer reading and the coordinates to return Captain Christopher and the guard?
Computed.
Bridge to transporter room. Captain Christopher.
Christopher is back in his flight suit.
This is Christopher.
We're coming up on Earth fast, Captain. Are you ready?
Everything okay. Captain, thanks for the look ahead.
Our pleasure, Captain. Bridge out.
Christopher steps back up onto the transporter platform. On the bridge, planet Earth looms in the forward view screen.
20 minutes, sir. It'll be close.
Bridge to transporter room. Prepare to energize.
10 minutes. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Energize.
You should be close enough for visual contact.
Captain Christopher in the cockpit of his starfighter looks up at the Enterprise high above him in the blue Nebraska sky. His whole frame shudders with sparkling light as he beams back into his own body. He searches the sky, dumbfounded. The Enterprise has disappeared.
Blue J4, can you see it? What is it? Blue J4, come in. We've lost the image.
The Enterprise monitors the transmission.
Blackjack, this is Blue J4. I could have sworn there was some kind of ship, but nothing could have moved that fast.
We don't track mirages.
Mark it down as another UFO. Blue J4 returning to base. Out.
Approaching second beaming, Captain.
Bridge to transporter room. Prepare to energize.
Now.
Energize.
On the airbase, the sergeant walks towards the Office of Statistical Services. His body freezes and shimmers with light as he beams back into himself. Recovering, he looks through the glass door into the office, and a shiver passes through him, as though someone had just walked over his grave. He looks in through the door, shrugs, and moves on.
Ask Pluto, sir.
What's our reading, Mr. Spock?
Approaching our century, Captain. Breaking should begin now.
Bridge to engineering. Begin full braking power.
Pulling away from the sun weakened them, sir. They may blow a part of I reverse.
No choice, Mr. Scott.
Aye, sir.
Scotty goes over to his engineers.
50 years to go.
Engine's cutting back, sir. No decrease in speed.
40. 30.
Never mind, Mr. Spock.
The Enterprise tilts alarmingly as the engines are thrown into reverse.
The engines!
The lights dim, and everyone hangs on to their stations as the huge craft bucks and tosses like a rodeo horse.
Engine near the bridge! Engines are on full reverse! And they're buckling! Bridge!
Mr. Scott is still with us.
Gradually, the Enterprise rights itself. Lieutenant Uhura hurries to her console.
Captain.
Starfleet Control calling Enterprise. Come in, Enterprise.
Open a channel, Uhura.
Frequency open, sir.
Starfleet Control. This is the Enterprise. Captain Kirk speaking.
Record ship arrival, dear.
Kirk scowls.
Enterprise, this is Starfleet Control. Come in, please.
Starfleet Control, repeating message. The Enterprise is home. Kirk out.
This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.